friends and not socializing with people is a strong motivation for cutting off of friendships. And so we find that Imam Ali alayhi salam further says, it is easy to find friends, but it is difficult to keep them. Now, of course, we need to keep in mind here that when Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about it is easy to find friends, of course, he's talking about good friends. He's talking about noble friends. He is talking about friends who help us to walk upon the path of Allah. He is talking about friends who help us to obey Allah. And of course, he is talking about friends who help us to refrain from disobeying Allah, and they help us to refrain from committing sins. Of course, the best kind of friend is a friend who helps us to be a better human being, helps us to be a better Muslim. Now, if we don't, keep in touch with these friends of ours, these good friends, noble friends, righteous friends, if we don't keep in contact with them, then the friendship starts to deteriorate, and eventually the friendship turns into an acquaintance, and an acquaintance into a stranger. And of course, we will find that, you know, eventually you lose that friend. A friend that was very helpful to us to be on the path of pure Muhammadan Islam. And so it takes a little bit of effort for us to keep these good friends. We have to be patient with them. We have to overlook their faults and their mistakes. We have to try to help them when they are in a difficult situation. And so truly, it is easy to find friends, but it is difficult to keep them. And of course, we see this fact in the life of Imam Ali alayhi salam, where people claimed to be his friend and claimed to be his followers and claimed to be his supporters, but towards the end of their own lives, they turned back on what they said. A beautiful, profound, and thought-provoking lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم إني أسألك الأمان يوم لا ينفع مال ولا بنون إلا من أتى الله بقلب سليم.
O Allah, I ask you for the protection on the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil.
وأسألك الأمان يوم يعض الظالم على يدي يقول يا ليتني اتخذت مع الرسول سبيلا.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger.
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
وقتی شخصیت امیرالمومنین رو بشناسه در مقابل او خضوع میکند.
کل صبح و کل شنابیان طبق عینی به دمع مشتابیان قد لسعت حیت الهوا کبدی فلا تبي ولا ولا راغي
Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli, who's going to talk about today's topic.
His name brings about a sense of strength in the heart. His remembrance is a source of inspiration for the souls. His legacy is widespread throughout the centuries and around the world. It is difficult not to stand in admiration and not to be proud to be of the followers of the brother of the Holy Prophet and the greatest human being after the Prophet, Amir al-Mu'mineen wa Imam al-Muttaqeen Ali ibn Abi Talib salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi. This magnificent human being epitomized the very qualities of a perfect individual sent by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for the guidance and for the well-being of all mankind. The love of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam is one that exists deeply and is found within our hearts and within our setup. It is not possible to find amongst the different communities around the world a group of people who will not love this individual, who have not learned to understand his excellence and his brilliance. In fact, from a young childhood, you and I have been raised with the love of this honorable individual, and we have become more and more attached to his personality the more we understand about his life, the more we appreciate his teachings, the more we recognize the importance of what he set out to achieve. That's why the famous Arab poet says, as far as our children, as far as our upbringing, as far as how we were inculcated with the love of Amir al-Mu'mineen, he famously says, لا عذب الله أمي إنها شربت حب الوصي وغذتنيه في اللبن. He says, may Allah never punish my mother because she drank the love of Ali and she fed it to me through the milk. وكان لي والد يهوى أبا حسن فصرت من ذي وذا أهوى أبا حسن. I have a father who loves Abu al-Hasan Ali, and that's why as a result of my father and my mother I was brought up in the love and the admiration of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The EU and its Western allies continue to pour hundreds of millions of euro worth of deadly weapons into Ukraine. Speaking in India on Monday, the head of the bloc's executive arm, Ursula von der Leyen, defended this policy.
Our response to Russia's aggression today will decide the future of both the international system and the global economy.
Just last week in the European Parliament, a number of legislators questioned the wisdom of pumping lethal weapons into Ukraine.
If there is a ceasefire, who's going to disarm those individuals who are receiving these arms? We know how weapons sent to fight al-Assad in Syria ended up being used for attacks in other countries.
Also, it's clear many EU citizens are against the enormous militarization of Ukraine by the West.
If you send weapons, maybe you will encourage the conflict.
We all must hope the world need peace.
I think the peace is the best way.
Weapon is not the answer to nothing.
Poverty is on the rise in the EU, and so campaigners say the huge amounts of money being spent on providing weapons for the conflict could be better spent.
People are faced with the COVID crisis, you know, with energy crisis, you know, the bills of people are tripled or even quadrupled. So it's something ununderstandable.
But the European Commission insists the arming of Ukraine is not about prolonging the conflict.
The war can stop today if Russia decides that it should stop. It has nothing to do with the arms deliveries to Ukraine. Ukraine is only defending itself.
However, a growing number of civil society organizations and lawmakers believe the West should be prioritizing peace talks over arms delivery. Otherwise, they suggest, there is no way of ending this conflict. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Hundreds of protesters flocked to central London on Sunday to honor the call of International Quds Day. The annual event, held on the last weekend of Ramadan, was initiated by the Islamic Republic of Iran in 1979 to express solidarity for Palestinians and staunch opposition to Zionism.
Israeli aggression against Palestinians during the holy month of Ramadan has become so regular that it's turned almost regrettably into an annual tradition. That's why tensions are so high this year, as continued aggression against the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound is ongoing even at the time of this recording.
Due to its popularity, many attempts have been made by pro-Israel groups to ban the rally, with critics citing anti-Semitism accusations. Event supporters, however, rubbished these claims.
The Al-Quds demonstration is in support of the Palestinians in their fight against Zionism. Zionism is a totally different philosophy to Judaism. Zionism is a false, secular philosophy. Judaism is an age-old religion. Being against Zionism is being against falsehood. Nothing to do with anti-Semitism at all.
The very fact that the protest movement is being criminalized and there are efforts to ban it, I think that speaks volumes. They don't want concepts of resistance to be spoken about. Like, I'm not sure if you realize in some of the protests, there's an emphasis on 1, 2, 3, 4, occupation no more, but not an emphasis on 5, 6, 7, 8, Israel is a terrorist state, right? It's like, we have solidarity with the oppressed Palestinians. We call out their victimhood, but we also target the aggressor.
The Al-Aqsa Mosque compound has been at the centre of weeks of heightened Israeli violence against Palestinian worshippers since the beginning of the Holy Month. With at least 19 Palestinians killed so far, fears remain high that another full-scale war could break out as Gaza's resistance threatens greater retaliation. Robert Carter, London.
Now
Amid the Israeli escalation against Palestinians, Yemenis have held a conference called Palestine, the Central Cause of the Nation, and the Yemeni capital Sana'a. Senior officials have participated in the event to express their support for Palestinians.
The conference was held in Sana'a, the capital, which represents a symbol of steadfastness and resistance in the face of those who normalize relations with the Israeli enemy. The Yemeni people are a living example of free people, as the central issue for us is Palestine. If Yemen was still ruled by the previous regime, it would have been portrayed as having normalized relations with Israel. But praise be to God, the Yemeni people have been liberated.
Organizers said this conference is a preparation for the celebration of the International Quds Day, as Yemenis will fill the streets of Sana'a to prove their solidarity with the Palestinian cause.
This conference comes as part of preparations for marking Quds Day, which will be unprecedented this year, as the Yemeni people will come out to confirm that Palestine is the central issue of the nation. The message that we are sending through this conference is that the Yemeni people, with all their sects and components, insist that the Palestinian cause is the basis for the solution to all the problems facing the Islamic nation.
During the conference, the president of Yemen's Supreme Political Council, Mahdi al-Mashat, called for forming official and popular funds to support the Palestinian people and returning the Palestinian issue to the curricula to emphasize its importance for all generations.
Despite everything that is currently happening in the world and the catastrophic situation in the country, people here say they will never forget the Palestinian cause. They say it is the time for the free people of the world to prove their support for Palestinians against ongoing Israeli crimes.
Israel, since its creation, has always touted itself as invincible, especially because of possessing advanced weapons and receiving unwavering military, intelligence, and financial support from the West, in particular the United States. Nonetheless, the myth of Israel's invincibility has been shattered over the past years as the regime suffered severe blows in the face of fierce resistance by the Palestinians, both in the besieged Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank. Irrespective of the casualties Israeli forces have sustained in the West Bank in response to their crimes against Palestinians, retaliatory attacks in Israeli cities have turned the spotlight on the regime's vulnerability. Since March 22nd this year, Palestinians have conducted several stabbing and shooting operations in Israel, including one in Tel Aviv, leaving over a dozen Israelis dead. Such retaliatory operations reflect the fact that Israel will have to brace itself for an armed resistance inside its cities. Following Israel's 11-day war on Gaza in May last year, the regime's spying fiasco also made headlines after Palestinians fired thousands of rockets into Israel. At that time, Palestinian media said the Israeli spying services could not predict Hamas and Islamic Jihad movement's tactics to beat the regime's much-vaunted Iron Dome system. Israeli media also called for a purge of the regime's military leaders for their role in the failed war on Gaza. But such incidents are just the tip of the iceberg. In September 2021, six Palestinian inmates escaped from one of Israel's highest security jails, which was described by Palestinian resistance groups as a major intelligence failure. Likewise, a spate of successful hacking attacks, which have broken into the servers of major Israeli companies, further exposed the weakness of the regime's intelligence service. But resistance against Israel is not restricted to Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank alone. Other resistance groups, such as Lebanon's Hezbollah, have dealt severe blows to the regime in response to its acts of aggression. The multifaceted attacks against Israel have devastated the regime's illusion of invincibility and its dreams of ruling from the Nile to the Euphrates.
The 16th session of the Quds Conference for Palestinian Youth was held in Damascus, Participants discussed means of uniting Palestinians in service of their cause, hailing resistance operations in occupied Palestine and the people's uprising in the face of Israeli forces.
Our message at this conference is that Palestinian youth outside Palestine are present on the front lines, just like the youth in Quds, Gaza and the West Bank. Palestinians are uniting. The Sword of Palestine battle reflects this unity, and this conference is one of the results of that battle.
The conference is held in parallel with the International Al-Quds Day, which was set by late Imam Khomeini on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan every year.
The message of Iran on Quds Day is that the only path for regaining Palestinian rights is resistance against the crimes of the Zionist entity. The message of Quds International Day is Islamic unity in the face of Israeli crimes. The track of normalization will not affect regaining Palestinians' rights.
We as Palestinian, Syrian and Arab youth send a message to our people in Quds in Aqsa Mosque that we will support them until the liberation of Palestine, from the sea to the river. Thanks to the Resistance Alliance, today we are more capable of triumphing. And as Imam Khamenei said, Quds will remain the axis.
The final communique called for national unity among all Palestinian factions, as well as re-establishing the PLO with a national plan based on resistance against the Israeli enemy. Events like this reiterate that Palestinian refugees across the world will never give up their right of repatriation. It's a message to Israel that their struggle will never stop until ending the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
French President Emmanuel Macron has been re-elected in a comfortable victory, defeating the National Rally's Marine Le Pen, just like in 2017. 6 years after Brexit and the election of Donald Trump, France has still not had a shock victory which opposes right-wing economics and globalization. Macron's victory will be celebrated by high finance in Brussels and by the so-called bourgeois bloc, who are his core supporters. However, the Yellow Vests have said for months that they view a Macron victory as intolerable and as a call to social battle.
We had 3 years of a struggle but couldn't get Macron out of power. It shows that there is no solution possible by the ballot, only on the streets. Many people will be quite desperate, so things could turn towards extreme social instability and maybe civil war.
Le Pen did see a major rise in support as compared with 2017, but the nationalist bloc still fell short. It seems that many voters simply could not vote in favor of even a rebranded National Front, whose far-right record goes back decades. Abstention hit 28%, the highest since 1969. Blank or purposely spoiled ballots are estimated to be an additional 12%. The populist bloc, who apparently wanted neither candidate, made their presence felt by denying Macron a convincing victory in terms of the overall electorate.
The biggest revolution to come will be philosophical and intellectual. We need a new way of thinking, a new way of being French, and we need a new France. With Le Pen or Macron, we were sure to lose our democratic rights and personal freedoms, and that's unacceptable to many.
Just like in 2017, Macron is likely to face calls that his victory is not a mandate for his proposed policies, such as raising the retirement age this fall. That means the country is likely to experience continued social unrest, which was unprecedented in Macron's first term. France's political future usually first surfaces in their neo-imperial colonies, like with the Yellow Vests. For the first time, the far right won most of France's overseas territories in what could be a preview of 2027. Ramin Mazahari, Paris.
Recent deadly attacks in Afghanistan have left Afghan families grieving. Some have lost their parents, and some their children. Here, we are meeting the family of Shahid Milad, who was killed in Tuesday's school bombing in Kabul. Milad's mother can't speak, as she is in a flood of tears, mourning the loss of her young son, but his disabled father managed to speak with great sorrow.
Milot was a very diligent boy. It was his last year at school. He was preparing himself to enter university. He used to tell me that he was going to become a doctor and make a living so that his father doesn't have to work. He wished to serve his family and society, but unfortunately they took him from us.
In another alley in Hazara neighborhood, another family is mourning the death of a father. After the attack on the school students, Mir Hussein went to bring his son home. But he himself fell victim to the second explosion.
My brother was on the roof when he heard a bomb explosion at the school. He quickly went to school to find his son Mahdi. He was searching around when the second explosion occurred. He was injured in the attack, but later at the hospital, we lost him forever.
Mahdi has survived the attack, but he is struggling with the shock of the attack and the pain of losing his father. Likewise, in the west of Kabul, there are many families whose beloved ones are either killed or wounded. They feel despaired and can't hold back their tears. It remains to be seen if the time can heal their wounds. These days, Afghan families want peace and security. People here say they're terrified of repeated blind terror attacks. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
A big rally was held in the besieged Gaza Strip to support Al-Quds in the face of rising Israeli aggression against the Holy City. Thousands of people from all walks of life came out to express their adherence to resistance as the best way to defend Al-Quds against Israeli attacks. Tensions have been on the rise in recent days as extremist Israeli settlers, backed by Israeli regime forces, desecrated the city's Al-Aqsa Mosque. Protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and slammed the silence of Arab countries towards the Israeli crimes. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, which organized the Friday rally, warned the Israeli regime against violations in Al-Quds.
We will not leave Al-Quds as a prey for the Zionist enemy, and our people are united today in defending Al-Quds. The Palestinian resistance is very strong and will defend Al-Quds against Zionist attacks. Today's rally and the masses here are sending a strong message to the Zionist enemy. If these Zionist attacks against Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque don't come to an end, our people will explode in the face of the Zionist entity.
Since the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan, the Israeli forces and illegal settlers have been trying to prevent Palestinians from gathering and performing their religious duties at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Al-Quds is sacred to all Muslims, and Palestinians consider it as the capital of their future state.
We are here today to show our solidarity and support for Al-Quds in the face of Zionist aggressions. All Palestinian resistance groups are here to send a message of unity. We will spare no effort to protect Al-Quds, and we call on all Arabs and Muslims to support the resistance and help us to protect Al-Quds and the Aqsa Mosque.
Palestinians have expressed their willingness to sacrifice their lives for the sake of liberating Al-Quds.
Observers say the international community has failed to help the Palestinians in Al-Quds and turned a blind eye to Israeli violations against them for decades. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Islam's holy book, the Quran, is the theme of this expo. Held every year in the fasting month of Ramadan, the International Quran Exhibition opened its doors after 2 years of hiatus, driven by the coronavirus pandemic. Now, the 29th edition of the event has brought here exhibitors from Iran and other Muslim countries to present their religious products. While the expo displays exquisite copies of the Quran, it also gives a chance to IT firms to showcase online versions of the Holy Book, among other religious apps and software. The art section is one of the popular parts of the event. It features paintings, calligraphy works, and conceptual artworks, all themed with the Quran. The holy month of Ramadan is believed to be the month when the holy book of Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad some 14 centuries ago. That's why this exhibition is held during the holy month, which is also referred to as the month of Quran.
Every Muslim family has a copy of the Quran in their houses to read its verses and ponder its divine messages as many times as possible during the year, and especially in Ramadan, as the month of the Quran's revelation to the Prophet. Now, one of the major goals of this expo is to promote the instructions of the divine book, especially among the younger generation. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Braving the scorching heat while fasting, protesters took to the streets after Friday prayers across Pakistan to voice solidarity with Palestinians, as tension continued to simmer in the occupied Al-Quds, where Israeli forces once again attacked Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Protesters here are outraged over what they call the double standards of the international community and the way they view Ukraine compared to Palestine.
Double standards is the biggest issue with international community. East Timor, South Sudan, Kashmir, Palestine, you name it. When Muslims are victims, they will always turn their backs on us. Therefore, I think it's about time to put an end to this collective behavior against Muslims on international stage.
Actually, we are, being a Muslim, Al-Aqsa, the Muslims over there are brothers and sisters. If they're in pain, we are feeling the same pain in our body. The whole Muslim Ummah is like a one body. If one part feels is in pain, the whole body feels the pain. So we are feeling that pain, and we are gathered here to tell the world that they are not alone. We are with them.
Speakers at the rally stressed upon the need of unity among the Muslim world.
People are who are gathered over here because of, as you know, the situation which is going on in Palestine. Israelis are continuously terrorizing or they're attacking the innocent people of Palestine. That's why we are gathering in the protest to show their solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Again, you know, the Jews, army and the military, paramilitary forces, they are not letting the Muslims over there freely praying and offering their rituals of the Ramadan. And everybody knows this is the holiest month of Ramadan, and this is very sacred to the Muslim.
The Israeli aggression against Palestinians has once again escalated during the fasting month of Ramadan. Scores of Palestinians have been injured by the Israeli forces at the Al-Aqsa Mosque over the past few days. Mohammed Turi, Karachi.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
An analysis released recently shows that the CEOs of some of the largest corporations in the United States made 254 times more than their median employees in 2021, as executive bonuses and stock awards grew significantly. Please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Jake Johnson, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Analysis Shows Top U.S. CEOs Made 254 Times More Than Median Workers in 2021. Here's the story. An analysis released recently shows that the CEOs of some of the largest corporations in the United States made 254 times more than their median employees in 2021, as executive bonuses and stock awards grew significantly. According to the latest edition of the Ecolar 100, an annual report that spotlights executive pay at leading U.S. companies, median total CEO compensation at top firms soared to $20 million in 2021, a nearly 31% increase from 2020. Increases were seen across all pay components, notes the new analysis, which lists the total compensation and CEO to median employee pay ratio of the 100 largest U.S. companies by revenue, a ranking that includes Apple, Microsoft, Raytheon, and Intel. While median salary and median perks increased incrementally, the largest jumps were examined in the form of cash bonuses and stock awards. The analysis notes the median value of stock awards increased by 22.7% in 2021, from $8.6 million to $10.5 million. Meanwhile, cash bonuses increased by 46.4% in 2021, from $2.8 million to $4.2 million. Intel CEO Pat Gelsinger topped the Cooler 100 list with $177.9 million in total compensation in 2021, followed by Apple CEO Tim Cook, who took home $98.7 million last year, a 569% increase from 2020. Amid record-shattering corporate profits and surging CEO pay, typical workers continued to struggle in 2021 as the coronavirus kept spreading and rising prices of food, housing, and other necessities eroded their modest wage gains. As Bloomberg reported last month, employee compensation rose 11% in 2021, but the so-called labor share of national income, essentially the portion that's paid out as wages and salaries, fell back to pre-pandemic levels. Sarah Anderson, director of the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, told CNBC recently that the new Ecolar study shows corporations really just let loose in 2021 and were focused on keeping their executives happy and not worrying as much about what was happening on the worker end. Anderson said workers, many of whom are on the front lines of the crisis, have not been reaping the rewards. Ecolar's findings provide further evidence that the decades-long trend of soaring CEO compensation and largely stagnant worker pay is persisting as legislative efforts to narrow the gap go nowhere. According to the Economic Policy Institute, EPI, CEO pay in the U.S. rose 1,322% between 1978 and 2020, while typical worker pay grew just 18%. Recently, EPI and Harvard University's Shift Project released a company wage tracker that uses survey data to show employee wage distributions at nearly 70 large retail and food service companies, including Dollar General, Walmart, McDonald's, and other prominent corporations. At a Starbucks, where workers have sparked a union organizing wave in recent months, 63% of workers mark below $15 an hour. EPI notes, at Dollar General and McDonald's, 92% and 89% of workers, respectively, make below $15 an hour. With nearly one in four workers making below $10 an hour at both companies, a majority, about 51% of workers, made below $15 an hour at Walmart. Ben Zipperer, an economist at EPI, said in a statement that low wages are a defining feature of the U.S. labor market, and the service sector in particular. Zipperer added, low pay is not limited to mom-and-pop stores. It is also widespread in big-box stores, restaurants, and grocery stores that often have high CEO pay and revenue. A higher minimum wage and unions can put corporate greed in check and raise wages throughout the labor market.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi.
Shaheed Muhammad Baqir Al-Sadr.
He was born in Kadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahruddin was.
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see.
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamarani that he says in Farsi, Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. I'm Atta, and you are listening to the program The Teacher, analysis on the thoughts and works of the most outstanding Shia dignitaries and ulama all across the world of Islam. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Ziyaniya. Sheikh Mahdavi, salamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Ziyaniya, salamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
So today we want to talk about one of the most outstanding Shiite dignitaries of the 13th century Hijra, according to the lunar calendar. He is mainly known as Sahib Jawahir, or the author of Jawahir al-Kalam. He is no one but Muhammad Hassan Sharif Isfahani or Muhammad Hassan Najafi. One of the most outstanding influential figures in the Hausa studies, whose work, as I said, Jawahir al-Karam, his magnum opus, has effects on the, we can say, lives and the research fields of studies of so many outstanding scholars of ulama of the even contemporary Hausa studies in Najaf, Mashhad, or the city of Qom. Sheikh Ziyaniya, let's start with you, brother. Very short biography of Muhammad Hassan al-Najafi or Sahib Jawahir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Late Ayatollah Muhammad Hassan Najafi was born in 1202 according to lunar calendar, Hijri. And he is well known as Sahib Jawahir because he has composed a really important book named as Jawahir al-Kalam that we inshallah talk about in future. He was born in Najaf. And there are some discussions regarding the exact date of his birth, but it's famous that he was born in 1202. And he was passed away when he was 64.
Yes.
He was not having a long life. He didn't have a long life.
Yes.
He was buried in Najaf al-Ashraf.
Right.
It is very important to note that his origin is from Isfahan. He's originally from Isfahan, a famous city in Iran. And his ancestors, I mean, his third ancestor, moved from Isfahan to Najaf. And from that moment on, they were living in Najaf al-Ashraf. And we should notice that he is the student of Sheikh Hassan al-Muhyiddin, Sheikh Qasim al-Muhyiddin. And the most important teachers of him are Sayyid Muhammad Jawad Amuli, the compiler of the book Miftah al-Karama, a very important book.
Yes.
And also Sheikh Ja'far Najafi, famous and named as Sahib Kashf al-Ghita, or
right.
They call him Kashif al-Ghita.
That's all right.
These are very important teachers of him.
That's all right, because we want to dedicate most of the time of this program to Jawahir al-Kalam fi Sharh Sharai al-Islam. Let's start with you, Sheikh Mahdavi. You know, this book is so important that nobody says Ayatollah Muhammad Hassan Najafi. Everybody, you know, in the Hausa studies, they call him as Sahib Jawahir. And maybe sometimes it is so much repeated that when you ask the Hausa students what is the original name, they cannot name it, okay? This is up to an extent that the name of a work, can say, is put on the name of the person. This shows the significance and importance of this important book. What is Jawahir al-Kalam exactly, and what was the main intention of Ayatollah Muhammad Hassan Najafi to write such a book?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As you said, Sheikh Muhammad Hassan Najafi is always called Sahib al-Jawahir, the author of the Jawahir al-Kalam, or the owner of this book. And this is because of the importance and significance of this book, which was well received by Hausa students after the actually publishing of this book. To talk about this book, we have to say that, first of all, this book is a commentary on Shara'i'ul Islam. As we see, the full title of the book also is Jawahirul Kalam fi Sharh Shara'i'ul Islam.
That's right.
What is Shara'i'ul Islam? Before we talk about Shara'i'ul Islam, we have to say this is a kind of academic habit of the ulama to take the book of one of the outstanding ulama, and instead of offering one individual independent book, they would prefer to have their comment on the great ulama's views, which was in their book. So among our ulama, during the 7th century, we have Muhaqqiq Hilli, who is the uncle of Allama Hilli. Maybe our listeners are more familiar with the name Allama Hilli. We have to know that Muhaqqiq Hilli actually was the uncle of Allama Hilli and also his teacher. Muhaqqiq Hilli, who died 676, actually 7th century, according to lunar calendar, he authored a very noble book. Of course, it was short, Shara'i'ul Islam, but why this book was well received by the ulama, I mean the great ulama, to have their comments on? Because it was, as they are saying, it was the first most organized book regarding the fiqh, fiqh al-Shia.
So Shara'i' here means
Shara'i'ul Islam, Okay. Because before that, we had the fiqh. We know we... In fiqh, we are talking about the worshipping acts. We are talking about the contracts or the uqud. We are talking about the general rulings regarding the sayyid and so on so. But to have all these actually huge body of fiqh in an organized way, they refer it first to Muhaqqiq Hilli. He put it in a very nice and neat organization, which was of four categories. Ibadat, which is actually worshipping acts. Uqud, which is the contracts. Iqa'at, this is one of the subcategories of the uqud, like talaq, divorce. All of these are considered under the category of iqa'at, and the ahkam, general rulings. There are some general rulings, So this book was commented by many ulama. Shahid Thani is one of those who had a very huge commentary on this book, and the other ulama. Among which, Sheikh Muhammad Hassan al-Najafi, who is known as Sahib al-Jawahir, authored his book containing of 43 volumes. So it's a huge book as a commentary on Shara'i'ul Islam. So when we get into the book, we see that the book has got a kind of a merged structure. I mean, you cannot, if it is published in one format, without distinguishing the actually main book, which is Shara'i'ul Ahkam, and the comments of Sheikh Najafi, you cannot distinguish which one is which. This is called the merged commentary.
But still, the four categories that you mentioned in Shara'i'ul Islam exist in Jawahirul Kalam.
No changes there.
The structure is the same, but the content
I'm just explaining. We have two types of commentary. One is you have the main author's view, and below that you have your comments. The other one is that you put your comments in between of the main author's view. So this is called Sharh-e Masjid, which we call it the merged commentary. As I said, if it is not distinguished through the colors, you cannot identify which one is which. So it requires a lot of skill to put your views in between of the view of the main author in a way that the sentence will make sense to the author.
And Ayatollah Najafi selected the merged one, isn't it?
So Sharh-e...
And he did not indicate whether it is his own decision or argumentation in between or not?
For all of the ulama, it is clear, because they are familiar with the context of Shara'i'ul Islam, and that is a very small
book. The style
book.
Is different,
style, everything is different. And nowadays, in these actually modern published books, they have it in either bold
the format, ball form or yes, the color or, format.
Yes, the color.
That's right. Okay.
But as I said, I was just trying to say to what extent it requires skills.
Skill, that's right.
Of the author.
Yes.
To talk in a way that you can put your wording, yes, be in between of the wordings right. of the author. So we have to also talk about okay. the actually content,
yes.
the way he was commenting
okay.
Sharia al-Islam, that
right.
Later on we will discuss about this issue as well.
So still the main question, Sheikh Ziyania, is that Sharia al-Islam was one volume short treatise or book, and now all of a sudden it is changed into a 43 voluminous book, okay? So is it only the Shar or the exegesis and the commentary of Ayatollah Najafi which is added, or no, the topics are also changed and varied, and also new topics regarding different four categories are added to the main book?
To answer your question, we should know that the importance of the book of Shara'i al-Islam is that this book, of although it was one volume book, but it was containing all the fiqh, all of it.
Okay.
And as Brother Mahdavi mentioned, the manner that it was introducing fiqh was new. The subjects were not new. We had the subjects previously. But the Muhaqqiq Hilli introduced a new way
yes.
of categorizing the chapters of fiqh.
Okay.
The same chapters are there in Jawahir al-Kalam.
Yes.
But the most important point that we should mention here is that Jawahir al-Kalam is not a book, but is an encyclopedia of fiqh. I mean by encyclopedia that when you go through the stuff of Jawahir al-Kalam, you see that all the words are not from Marhum Najafi, but you can find the words of Sheikh al-Tusi,
okay.
you can find the words of Sheikh al-Mufid rahmatullah alayhi, you can find the words of Ibn Idris rahmatullah alayhi, and many important scholars, Shahid al-Awwal, Shahid al-Thani,
yes.
Muhaqqiq Kharki, all these great scholars, their words are reflected in this book.
So one same topic is over there and different comments by different scholars are over there now.
Yes.
Okay, very
so
good.
We should say in this word that the main subject is aroused by the words of Marhum Muhaqqiq Hilli, that is the book of
yes.
Shara'i al-Islam. And then the great Ayatollah Najafi is trying to explain his words. And then after that, late Ayatollah Najafi gives the words of scholars and giving their argumentations.
That's right.
And at the end, he decides, most of the times, he decides which of these words are the best.
Mm-hmm.
And he explains the best idea.
In the book?
Yes.
Okay.
This is the way that we is, you know, is named and is famous as the name of Fiqh al-Jawahiri.
So I think in this way, Jawahir al-Kalam is a history of fiqh too, isn't it?
We may say this.
Okay.
But the aim of the author was not to collect the history of fiqh.
Okay.
But you may find some sorts of
yes.
History of fiqh inside
That's
it.
Right.
But you need to try
okay.
to drive it out.
Mm-hmm.
But the main purpose of this book is to give different ideas regarding the same subject in
yes.
fiqh.
Okay.
For example, when you are talking about Salatul Layl,
mm-hmm.
how to perform it,
yes.
different ideas are there.
Yes.
When you are trying to find different ideas regarding the intention, niyyah,
yes.
in, for example, fasting, in Salat,
yes.
in Hajj, different ideas are there, different riwayat are mentioned, and then at the end, Marhum Najafi is trying to give the best idea.
That's right.
Another important point that I should mention here is that Marhum Najafi was not trying to write a book at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
One of the students of him quotes him that late Ayatollah Najafi said that I wanted to collect the ideas of Fuqaha for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was important to me to complete the process of Ijtihad for myself.
Yes.
Then when his students mm-hmm. in the class, they found his notes,
yes.
they found it very precious and asked him to publish it.
Okay.
So that's why we see that this book is there.
Yes.
But it's important to know that
yes.
a mujtahid, to complete his research
mm-hmm.
and to correct his
okay.
method of ijtihad, tries to collect the aqwal and the ideas of the scholars
yes.
as more as he can.
That's right. That's why he called it Jawahir al-Kalam, isn't it? I mean, the
yes.
most precious jewels of the ideas and the comments of different outstanding fuqaha during the history. And this is really outstanding. And I think Sheikh Mahtavi, when taught, the style of the teaching is very much the same as the content of the book, isn't it? I mean, different ideas are over there. Then the marja or the alim will say his own idea and they'll do discussion regarding different ideas, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. But I have to mention this point that this book is not going to be picked as one of the textbook for the house nowadays. Uh-huh. Maybe partially in some of the advanced level of fiqh, it will be some part of that selectively will be chosen by the ustad. And as you said, the style of the book is requiring that type of teaching. So you cannot take it and just read off from the text.
Okay.
We are actually believing that to reach the level of ijtihad, the person must be equipped with different knowledge so he can criticize the viewpoints of different ulama. Why? Because empowered by the knowledge, he himself, he is not only listener, mere listener.
That's right.
So we can feel this. When we go over the actually pages of Jawahirul Kalam, if you are not familiar with this, with the text, if you are not familiar with his style, you know the topic. In the first page, Sheikh Najafi convinced you to accept one view regarding this issue.
Okay.
So the next page, he is just talking the way that, okay, what I said right now, it was completely wrong. Let's try this one. And by the end of the second page, you will say, okay, this is the right view. What I went through was wrong. So you will be happy that, okay, I got the point. In the third page, you see, okay, against he goes against the other two things that he just said it. So it will enable the students to see, not to accept the views easily, try to criticize and from which angles they can criticize the view. Sometimes they go through the chains of the riwayah.
Yes.
Sometimes they go through the actually consensus of the ulama saying, okay, this is a verdicts according to the consensus or ijma of the ulama, but we can consider it from the other aspect, and then he start talking about that issue.
I think this way the analytical power
of
the students
that's
are
why they
improved.
Say, okay, right now we are in need of fiqh jawahiri. So we put the
analytical fiqh, you mean?
Yes. So we consider the issue or mawdu. So we are trying to look at the mawdu from different aspects, considering the views of all of the ulama beforehand, not to regard, to dismiss whatever our ulama and predecessors have said about
it. So for a marja, I mean the living marja that we have nowadays, in order to write a resala or the treatise of Islamic laws, I think one of the main references must be Jawahirul Kalam. That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Mahtavi and Sheikh Ziainia, for your presence in the program. The teacher, Sha'ban 1st, 12/16/6 is a day that he passed away, and he's buried in the holy city of Najaf al-Ashraf in the country Iraq. May Allah bless his soul. The late Ayatollah Muhammad Hassan al-Najafi, mainly known as Sahib Jawahir, or the author of Jawahir al-Karam fi Shar Sharai al-Islam. It was very kind of you, Sheikhs. Thank you very much. And thank you very much, dear listeners. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the program, The Teacher. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Shian Call of Islam page. Also, a YouTube channel, Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode introducing another Shia dignitary. God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.